We do welcome you today, and we appreciate your being here today. In the late 60s, there was a film. The title of it is If It's Tuesday, This Must Be Belgium. It was a movie that lampooned the touring industry, that situation where people in a different country every day, and turned into a romantic comedy, as those kind of shows often do. But, you know, you get that kind of sense of, well, if this happens, then this has to happen. The reason I shared that is because I know that a lot of church people are like, if it's November, then it's bound to be budget time. And that's exactly the case in the reality of everything that's here. It's not the most fun in the world, but it's a necessary exercise. After 16 years, it gets kind of hard to find a creative way to deal with this particular topic. I had a real good situation this year, though, because I've been using Luke chapter 12. And right there in the middle of Luke chapter 12 is this wonderful parable. And so I just juggled things around over the last couple of weeks. You may have noticed. But this week we go back to a story that you all know that is so useful, so appropriate, and just really deals with the topic that we're focusing on today. Luke chapter 12, starting in verse 13, the parable of the rich fool. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus is going to be a little bit shocked about this, as we'll see in the next verse, but somebody in the crowd has decided that Jesus is a wise and capable person. Therefore, maybe with the credibility that he has, he could have some influence over the brother. We don't know exactly what's going on. Most of the commentators point to the fact that in the Jewish situation, the older brother got a double portion. And it may be that there's these two brothers, and the younger brother is wanting an equal portion rather than a lopsided portion. There could be any number of other things that are at play here. But Jesus responds to that, the next verse, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Not my job, not my task, not my situation. Now, Jesus isn't being afraid. He's being practical. He's not here to get involved in all the petty arguments that people have. He's here to teach. And that's exactly what he tries to do. Verse 15, "Then he said to them, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." This is, as is often the case with Jesus, a teachable moment. And he's going to teach. And as I mentioned a number of times, this incredible thing happens where he says, "Well, let me tell you a little story to illustrate my point." And then he begins in verse 16. And he told them this parable. "The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." He goes out and says, there's more stuff here than I can possibly manage. How am I going to deal with it? It's a quandary, difficult situation. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I'll store my surplus grain. I'll keep it all. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. Of course, you know from reading this story in the past exactly where it's headed. But the people that were listening to this story initially didn't. And imagine just a moment what the surprise would have been when Jesus shares the end of the story in verse 20. "But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself?" And you can just see the shock that goes among the crowd as they see this reality that Jesus has introduced here. And then Jesus concludes by saying, "This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God." Now, there are literally dozens of ways to look at this passage. But what I'd like to do this morning is pull out three quotes and look at those three as we look at how this issue relates to our own lives. And the first one is the message that Jesus shares before he tells the parable, when he says simply, life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. Now, Try to sell that to our culture. How many people in your world believe that? We look around and there's this great competition that seems to be taking place out there. People are desperately trying to achieve more, to have more, to make their self-worth seem important by being successful in business or successful in their job, successful in life. And the measurement that we're using, unfortunately, over and over again in this culture is, how much money do you have? How many material possessions have you acquired? What does that say about you? What are the indications of the kind of person that you really are? That old deal, the one with the most toys wins. But if you look at it intellectually, this is a no-brainer. Here it is. Do I really want to have all this stuff? Or are there other things that are most important? Virtually any survey of values comes back that people say that relationships are the most important. And yet when you look at lives, what are people actually pursuing? You see that difference and it becomes so dramatic. It's so obvious that when you think about it, Satan really doesn't challenge this. He doesn't come to us and say, no, this stuff is more important than the people you love. This stuff is more important than the inside and how you feel about yourself. This stuff, and he doesn't try to do that. Often what he tries to do is when we look into the eyes of those people that we love and care about, and we feel this tremendous responsibility toward those people, Satan doesn't say, oh, they aren't as important as your possessions. What he says is, you know, just for today, you need to ignore them, not take care of them. You need to go past them because it gives you an opportunity to really help them. They need you. They're dependent on you. And that means you don't get to spend all of your time with them. Well, what you need to be doing is understanding that right now, for just today, or just this week, or just this month, or just this year, you need to be working harder and doing more and accruing more because then you can really meet their need. And he just tackles right into that same philosophy and moves it forward very much. Just today, it's all you have to do. We convince ourselves, yeah, I am taking care of my family. I am showing my family that I love them. I am providing everything for them. How could they possibly miss the point? And they say, but parent or mate or whomever, you know, I want and I need you. It's a part of this situation. We understand that that's the game. We understand that that's the process. We also have the difficult spot of saying, well, aren't there times when you have to leave your family behind to do what you do for a living? Sure, that's true. So how do you create that balance? Jesus goes back to the original statement, I believe, and would say, life is not about possessions. And if you're measuring possessions, you're measuring with the wrong measuring stick. Then you roll ego in there and all of the things that that means. When Ray Romano was making the show, Everybody Loves Raymond, if you saw that show, then you know, and I mention it often because it's by far and away my favorite show in terms of situation comedies. Where did he get all those ideas for the show? Well, they came out of his real life. The people in the show are remarkably according to what's written, very similar to the real people in his life. And so he take real events. And one day he tells the story about he and his wife are in this really intense argument. And they're just fighting and things aren't going well. And she looks over at him and she says, this better not be on television. And he says, he stops and says, it has to be. How do you think we got all this stuff? How do you, this possessions, look at all these things we have. The way that you get that stuff is by telling stories about our family. And you can understand how his wife would be just a little bit concerned about that. Is that what you trade? Is that the trade that you make? What's more important? Jesus tells us what's more important. And Satan says, yeah, that's okay, but not always. You can manipulate that just a little bit. The rich man says, I'm going to store it all up. Then I'm going to sit back and I'm going to say, take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. Now, some of you know, and maybe you've said this in a Bible class or heard somebody else say in a Bible class, this is actually a verse from the Old Testament. In the book of Ecclesiastes, in chapter 8, verse 5, so I commend the enjoyment of life, because there is nothing better for a person under the sun than to eat and drink and be glad. Then joy will accompany them in their toil all the days of life God has given them under the sun. Solomon says, nothing better than to eat, drink, and be merry. Now, if you're thinking maybe that's an isolated passage, it appears in some similar way four more times in the book of Ecclesiastes. There's five references to this in that particular book. So what's the problem then? Well, it's not about enjoying life. It's not about taking time out for you. It's not about having something that's positive. It's not about the guilt that we feel when we go, well, I'm not constantly doing something for somebody else. It's not wrong to take some me time. What's the rich guy doing, though? He's focusing everything on him. He's focusing everything on his self-pleasure. He's totally wrapped up in his own self-interest. And so it becomes a conflict between what he wants and what he knows God would have him do. We're here not to put forward our own self-interest. We're here to glorify God. And when we get that confused, it creates a lot of difficulty in our lives. And you look at that sometimes and think, well, why is it like that? Well, if you look at the third thing that's included there, but is not rich toward God. This was the thing that the rich man was guilty of doing or ignoring. He's not rich toward God. He's taking care of his own self-interest, but he's not taking care of God. It's not wrong to be rich, okay? You don't have to come to me in the foyer and say that, because every time I talk about this topic, somebody feels compelled to say that. It's not wrong to be rich, but it is difficult. And if you don't believe that, go to Matthew chapter 19, verse 24. Jesus makes it very clear when he says, again, I tell you, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of God. It is difficult, and it's a challenge. And keeping the balance between our own self-interest and our own accomplishment and being rich toward God is a very complex kind of situation. How could the guy in the story have been rich toward God? Pretty easy. He could have shared. Pretty simple. Were there people in his time who needed food? Certainly there were. Were there people in his time who could have utilized the profit that could have come from selling those extra things? Well, of course there were. This guy has the opportunity to show God's love. He has the opportunity to be God's hands. He has the opportunity to be involved in a cooperative venture with God. He and God work together to make something really incredible happen. This is sitting there waiting for him, and he says, nope, I want to take care of my own needs. Now, when we read this story, there's the tragedy that the man dies at the peak of having everything. But you know, I believe that the true tragedy of this story is that he misses out on the opportunity to be God's instrument. He misses out on this incredible experience that could have occurred if he had been willing to do what God wanted him to do. If he had said, okay, Lord, I'll be your hands. Okay, Lord, we'll use my money to do what it is that you want to do. We'll work together on this, and we'll create things, and through your direction, I'll make things happen. What kind of person could he have been after that was over with? We don't ever really know. But when we look at our own quandaries, it's certainly part of it as well. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 19. Paul says to Timothy, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. When do you have enough? When are you at the place where you're totally insulated from any of the negative things that can happen in your life? Years ago, I read the biography of Sam Walton. And this man increased a tremendous amount of wealth. And yet, there's a large part of that book that focuses on the end of his life and the fact that he was not able to buy health care that would change the course of his disease. It was bigger than what he could provide. Verse 18. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. And then finally in verse 19, in this way they will lay up for treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming life. And then this last statement in this section, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. Paul says, what's really living? Is it having it all? Is it doing everything you want to do? Is it being able to justify or satisfy any whim that you have? No, that's not it. Sharing brings you to a place where you experience a life that is much more positive and beneficial than that. I'd like to end this morning by sharing with you a story. It's kind of a long story, but I think it's useful and beneficial. It's the story of a couple that I know, and they have given me their permission to share this particular story. A young man got out of college, and he was just really eager to find a place in this world that would allow him to demonstrate how intelligent he was, how capable he was, all the things that he could do. And as a very young man in his early 20s, he came in contact with a guy who had a restaurant. And the guy who owned the restaurant's goal was to have more restaurants and build a chain. And so he couldn't afford to hire the great planners. He hired this young kid and said, try to make it happen. And the young man did. They were able to do a second restaurant and a third and a fourth. And then, boy, it just really got to rolling. It was moving along very, very well. The young woman in the story actually worked for the restaurant. And she saw this guy and saw what he did and saw what he accomplished. And the two of them developed very strong feelings for each other. They dated for 4 years. And across that period of time, a number of times he asked her to marry him. And she said, no, you're already married. I'm not married. Yeah, you are. You're married to your job. You're married to the work that you do. When I was able to do their premarital counseling, and a lot of times with premarital counseling, people don't know what to expect. They don't really know what's going to happen or what's going to take place. This couple was totally different. They walked in with this great, big, huge, giant problem, and they dropped on the floor and said, job. And she said, unless he's willing to change the way he approaches job, I'm not going to marry him. So we worked through all that, and she kind of finally came to the place where she said, okay, I'm willing to get married. And they had a beautiful wedding, went off to a wonderful honeymoon, 2 weeks in Hawaii. Third day that they're there, the boss calls and says, got to have you back. There are problems here that only you can solve. Of course, the guy hung up the phone, started throwing stuff into the suitcase. What's going on? We're going home. They need me. They can't do without me. I've got to go back home. And she thought about staying. She thought about a number of things. About a week later, she announced that the wedding was over. Not in any kind of private way, but in the foyer of the church. She was extremely frustrated. And this couple had some real problems, as you certainly can imagine. They managed to stay together for about 10 years. This business thing is going great. Lots of new restaurants. The chain is doing super. And the owner looks around and says, you know, something could happen to all this, so I'm just going to sell it. I'm going to sell this thing. We may have expanded too much, and And so the young man's not too worried. He says, well, I'll just raise the capital and I'll buy the chain and I'll be in better shape than I was before. What he really doesn't understand is that the owner has been really unhappy that people have given this young man so much credit for what he thinks really ought to be his success. And so he begins a whisper campaign and he attacks the young man and he implies that he's not honest. He's not reliable. He's not dependable. And the financing falls through. And the guy is not able to buy the chain. In fact, he doesn't even have a job. Totally out of a job. The strange part of the story is, she's worked in kind of a part-time home situation. And through a couple of investments that she's made, they're able to stay afloat. And she becomes the breadwinner of the family. And that continues for some time, and they learn a whole lot of different things. And I want you to know that aside from the premarital stuff, I haven't been involved in this at all in any way except a friend. They've really had this incredible experience. This is not a happily ever after story, but it's also not a tragedy because they're still married. They're still working this out. They talk very openly and they're very transparent about this journey that they've been on. They're very transparent about their relationship with money and their relationship with possessions and how that's changed them and how they've had to change themselves in order to get those possessions in the right balance in their life. And there are people who have encouraged them to write a book, and I think it would be an excellent idea. The reason I share that story with you is I believe that if we're honest, most of us can find places in that story that we connect to. Times when that's us. When we've been pulled in a certain way, when we've responded in a certain way. Maybe you see in that story a lot of things that remind you of you. And the good part about that story is it continues. It moves on. It's not something that you beat. It's not something that you decide one day, this is how I'm going to do it. It's something that emerges day after day and over again. And constantly God is telling us what we need to do with our possessions. And Satan is arguing that that isn't necessary. And we have to make these day by day, moment by moment decisions about the material things in our lives. Yeah, it's November and that must be budget time. But more importantly, it's a time to look at a critical issue in our lives. It's something that can be a wonderful blessing to our lives. It's something that can be a wonderful blessing in our relationship with God, or it's also something that can distract and divert us from the important things that God has provided in our lives. In just a minute, we're going to offer an invitation. And if you this morning feel compelled to respond to that invitation, we'd be glad to help you in any way that we possibly can. But as I conclude this morning, I'd like to share with you four more passages from that same Timothy chapter 6. But godliness with contentment is great gain. Again, is that what our culture would say? What are the most important things? How about godliness and contentment? And then verse 7 really throws us a curveball. For we brought nothing into this world and we can take nothing out of it. Verse 8. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Wait a minute, where's my cell phone? Where's my house? Where's my car? Where are all these things? I want to be content. And God says, well, maybe you need to cut back on the things that you're acquiring and using in life. I'm not saying this morning that those things are wrong or sinful. What I'm saying is this is a pretty basic kind of way the Bible points us. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. And then that classic passage, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. The message is yours. If you need to respond in any way, we invite you to do that while we sing together.